Welcome to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues, a weekly program discussing issues of concern to the family and those who hold traditional family values in Pennsylvania and our nation. Archives of these programs can be heard at www.afafpa.org. And now, your host, Diane Gramley, State Director of American Family Association of Pennsylvania.
New York Times writer Nicole Hannah Jones won a Pulitzer Prize for the 1619 Project, so it must be a great work, right? Oprah Winfrey and Lionsgate Media are teaming up with the New York Times to bring the 1619 Project to film and TV. Winfrey is reported to be the producer. More evidence that it's great, right? The 1619 Project, which was introduced about a year ago, has wormed its way into school curricula, books, and a popular podcast, among other platforms, so it must be accurate and extra great, right? Wrong. Three strikes and it's out. And during today's program, we are going to tell you why this is so very dangerous to our students and the very future of our nation. My guest today is Tim Barton, president of Aledo, Texas-based Wall Builders. Thanks, Tim, for being with us.
Pleasure to be with you. Thanks for having me on.
So the Pulitzer Center, that's not supposedly not related to the Pulitzer Prizes, has designed this curriculum based on 1619. Why did they choose that particular year?
Well, probably as many of the listeners already know, hopefully we've already had some of this exposed for many of them, but 1619 is referring to when the first load of slaves arrived in Jamestown. And even saying that is a little skewed of the history in general. There was a Portuguese slave trading ship. It was captured by a British ship, and they were relatively close to America at the time. And so the British ship brought that slave, or that Portuguese slave ship, they brought it to Jamestown, and this is where people say this is where slavery started in America. The problem with that statement is that slavery was not a thing in Jamestown at this point yet. There, at America, there had been slaves because you did have natives enslaving other natives. Mm-hmm. So there was already slavery on the continent, but it was not European enslaving Africans on the continent at this point. So 1619, there was estimated to be 19 members on this slave ship that arrives to Jamestown. But again, when it gets to Jamestown, slavery is not really a thing for Europeans enslaving Africans yet at this point in American history. And so when these 19 individuals arrive who had been slaves, they were Africans, had been captured in Africa, had been brought to be sold into slavery. The Portuguese were taking them to a different port to sell them into slavery when they were captured by the British. When they get to Jamestown, they're made indentured servants because indentured servitude was what was happening in Jamestown at that time, not so much chattel slavery as became more prominent many years later.
Yeah, usually the indentured service ship was like 7 years or so.
The reason that's significant is indentured servitude lasted for 7 years, and at the end of 7 years, not only were you given your freedom, you were given land and property, and you became a land owner. And one of the individuals who's largely believed was part of that slave ship was a black man named Anthony Johnson. Anthony Johnson became a free black in America, became a landowner in America. He actually had indentured servants over the years, and it was actually a court decision with Anthony Johnson where slavery first became legalized in a chattel kind of sense in America, where it wasn't for the punishment of a crime or it wasn't slavery in justified war. It was just owning another person. Well, Anthony Johnson had an indentured servant who, working for him, kind of a bargain with indentured servitude was you would say, okay, I will pay for your passage or your livelihood or whatever else. You work for me for 7 years, and at the end of the 7 years, you are free, and again, then you get property, you become a landowner, and et cetera. Right. Well, Anthony Johnson had a servant who was working for him, and at the end of those 7 years, this servant went and indentured himself with somebody else, and Anthony Johnson said, wait a second, I paid money to have you come and work for me for these 7 years, and I didn't get my money's worth from you. So he went to court to protest that he should have this servant, and this is kind of what the court records show, for the rest of this servant's life, because it would take that long for this servant, who apparently was not very productive or maybe was lazy, whatever the case was, this servant was not helping bring profit to repay, in essence, the money that Anthony Johnson had spent. And the court looked and said, you're right, you can have this servant for the rest of his life. And so this was the first legalized slavery in America that wasn't for the punishment of a crime or wasn't for being conquered or captured in justified warfare. And so, it actually was a black man owning another black man was the first legal court decision in kind of the European-American sense. So to say the 1619 Project is where slavery started in America, or that all of America was built on the back of slaves,
right.
There's so many accusations they make. It's just not historically grounded or rooted in truth, which is why even many of the liberal professors who were tasked to help with this project, they actually discredited this project before it ever went out. Once it came out and there were found to be many factual errors in it, these professors said, look, we told them it was bad history when they did it, but they wanted to do it anyway. And it is boggling to the mind that this is an award-winning piece when even the leftist liberal professors acknowledge it's really bad history.
Shows how tainted the Pulitzer Prizes are. I mean, that's... But you're saying the thing is distorted from the beginning.
Absolutely what? It is.
Oh, my goodness. And, wow. I didn't know that, but that background about it. Wow. That totally even makes it worse than what I thought it was. So, yeah, and again, like you said, they're trying to paint the United States' success totally on the backs of slavery. That, you know, if it wasn't for the slaves, the United States would not have been a success. And invite students to, quote, come together as a class to create a new timeline of U.S. history, and that their timeline was starting in 1619, unquote. So we're talking about students who already have, in too many cases, either no knowledge of real American history or a tainted view already, but then the class project, the 1619 Project, is for students to take 1619 as the founding of the U.S., which we all know that in itself is incorrect, and that slavery started in 1619. That's when the U.S. started, and make your own timeline from that point. That kind of it in a nutshell. They want the kids to rewrite American history.
Yeah, and really it wants to show how bad America is.
Yeah.
And this is one of the things, if people do any research into the 1619 Project, it's very similar to even like the Black Lives Matter movement,
mm-hmm.
where it's absolutely founded on Marxist ideals and ideology. And part of the goal of Marxism is the destruction of kind of independence, of families, of capitalism, of things that would make people independent of the government.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the objectives we've seen from very progressives, very far leftists for decades, is they want to see America really brought to her knees. And part of the way you do that is you have to divide America. We can't be Americans in the sense of, regardless of our shape, our size, our color, our gender, our ethnicity, we now have to be defined by all of the things that are seemingly less significant, right? If we, as Christians, if we read the Bible, you don't read that Jesus died on one day for the Asians and on one day mm-hmm. for the Australians and on one day for the Africans. No, no, no. God so loved the world. And one of the things even the Apostle Paul tells us is that in Christ, there's no Jew, there's no Greek. There's no male, there's no female, there's no
right.
Scythian or slave or free. We are all one in Christ. That's not the message that's being promoted today, but part of what Marxism does is it tries to divide people and separate and ultimately destroy some of those fundamentals of the nation. And this is what the 1619 Project is largely doing, showing that America is fundamentally evil. They actually promote that capitalism is evil, that socialism is more equitable. They go through just all kinds of crazy claims and assertions. And one of the biggest, to me, problems about it is not only are we lying with saying things that are untrue, we are also lying by not saying what is true,
mm-hmm.
right? Because you can lie in multiple ways. But one of the greatest lies is by not telling the whole truth and
right.
therefore distorting even worse what a situation is. And so if you look at America, absolutely, America had slaves, and that was a very bad thing in the reality of what we know to be moral or what we would argue to be even biblical.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't be enslaving other people. We can largely argue and agree with that assertion. With that being said, the way the 1619 Project paints the story of slavery in America, it paints the picture as if America was the only nation to have slaves, and therefore America is the great evil of all nations. And this is where it's utterly ludicrous.
Right.
America did have slaves. That is absolutely true. America was also the very first nation in the history of the world to sign a law banning the slave trade. We did it in March 2nd, 1807. It was signed by Thomas Jefferson, which is also then very interesting because today people argue that he was one of those big pro-slavery guys, and his position on slavery is not as clean and clear-cut as people imagine, that he was just in favor of slavery
mm-hmm.
And against rights for blacks. It's really not accurate when you study what he did in a lot of his writings and a lot of his positions. Nonetheless, America becomes the very first nation to sign a law banning the slave trade, England did it on March 25th, 1807. So just a couple weeks later, England signs the law. And some people would argue that England, that they did it first because their law did go into effect in 1807. The American law didn't go into effect until January 1st, 1808, because that's what was bound under the Constitution, is we couldn't end the slave trade till 1808 constitutionally. However, when England signed and passed her law and it went into effect, England left a provision that there could be a gradual abolition of the slave trade, because they said other ships might already have contracts, and if you already have a contract to deliver slaves and you're already en route, then you finish your contract, and then when you come back, then we're done. Oh, wow. America in 1801, or excuse me, in January 1st, 1808, America said, nope, we are not having any more slave ships going in, coming, whatever, we're totally done with this thing. And so we actually ended it before Britain did, even though their law went into effect first. Now, that's just the slave trade. When you get to 1865, America actually ends slavery with the passage of the 13th Amendment. You had the Emancipation Proclamation before that. We were the fourth nation in the history of the world in slavery. England did it in 1833, then Denmark did it, then France did it, and then America did it. At that time, there's 124 nations in the world. America was the fourth of 124 nations to end slavery. What you will discover if you look at the story of slavery in America is America started earlier than basically any other nation in the world. And America paid a higher price than any other nation in the world. Looking at the Civil War, looking at what was done, America paid a higher price to end slavery in this nation. And even today, America does more than basically any other nation to try to end the current and ongoing slave trade in the world. Because right now, it's estimated that there are 40 million people that are currently enslaved in the world. And as you're looking at this, the United Nations has 195 member nations that were present this last year. 94 of those nations have not passed laws banning slavery in those nations, which is why there can be 40 million people in slavery today. And if you look at Africa or Asia, you look at China, you can look at Indonesia, there's a lot of nations that have lots and lots and lots of slavery going on in the nation. We don't get that part of history today. And so when somebody says, well, we had slavery in America, and America's bad because we had slavery, well, it's true that America had slavery, and it's true that it's bad that America had slavery, but we lose the context that every nation in the history of the world had slavery.
Yeah, that was part of
it. And we don't talk about the fact that America was the first one to sign a law banning the slave trade, and we were the fourth nation to end slavery in the history of the world, and a lot of nations still have not even made it to that point, where America is still doing more than basically every other nation to fight slavery today. We're just not telling the whole story. And this is where the 1619 Project also is so dishonest, because what they're doing is attacking the fundamental values and principles of America.
Right.
When
and
the Declaration said that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, it was that view of equality that the abolitionists argued and fought for to help end slavery. It was those statements that led America, and Pennsylvania is a great example, because you had some great anti-slavery leaders in Pennsylvania. The very first abolition society in America was founded in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. Pennsylvania is a great example of where so many of the founding fathers actually were anti-slavery and fought to end slavery, and we were doing that at a time when nobody else in the world was doing it. So to say that America's bad because we had slavery, well, it's true, but if you don't tell the rest of the story, then you're being very dishonest, and the reason they're being dishonest is because of their pro-Marxist, pro-socialist, pro-communist ideology, where they want to destroy America, they want to destroy freedom, they want to destroy capitalism, they want to destroy America as a whole, and to fundamentally transform America, and that's part of what the 1619 Project is trying to do.
Right. Did you say 95 of the member nations in the UN still have not banned slavery? 94.
Yeah, there's 195 nations that are part of the UN, and 94 of those nations have not passed laws banning slavery in the nation. And that doesn't necessarily mean that all 94 of those nations are still practicing slavery, but it's just significant that that you have nations, they never passed an anti-slavery law or a law banning slavery in general. America did that before basically anybody else. Only three nations beat us in the history of the world for ending slavery, but we were the very first nation to ban the slave trade. And these are the things that it's very well documented, and you can't even really argue against it. It's just nobody is talking about it to give the whole context of history to be able to understand that even though what happened in America wasn't good, America still did really good at ending it before basically anybody else in the world.
Yeah, my whole thing, you mentioned the Civil War. I mean, 600,000 Americans died to end slavery. And this call for reparations, I believe we already paid reparations 600,000 times when that many died to end slavery. And aren't we the only nation to fight a Civil War to end slavery?
Yes, ma'am. We're the only nation where white people fought a war against other white people, and at the end of the war, they freed the black people who were slaves.
Yeah.
So
wow.
That's the only time you've ever seen that on that scale. And you're right. The price that we paid for that to happen was enormous. Arguably, no other nation has gone to a greater extent, length, or struggle. No other nation has paid more than America to see that evil ended in their nation. And that doesn't mean that was the end of all evils in America. One of the things that is easy to point out is that as long as you have humans in a nation, there will be evils at times in that nation.
Humans.
Because we know that all men have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God.
Right.
We know that nobody's perfect, and therefore no nation will ever be perfect. Where America has always been different is that every time that we've had atrocities in this nation, it was the influence of Christianity. It was the pastors. It was the faith leaders. It was the churches who rose up to fight those atrocities to end that in America. If you look at the people who were in favor of the abolition movement, were in favor of ending slavery, what you will discover is that almost unequivocally, those were Christians, those were pastors, those were churches leading the charge to end slavery in America. And this is why America has always been so different. It's not that we haven't had evils or atrocities or bad moments in America. We have, because you have people, and people do sinful, wicked, evil things at times. But we've always had the foundation of biblical truth in the nation that when those evils happened, you had Christians rise up to oppose those and to put an end to those things. And in America, we ended those evils largely before any other nation in the world. And
Absolutely.
That's part of why America is unique and special.
Right. And, you know, the rioting we see in the streets, the cries that America is racist, it just leaps off the back of something like the 1619 Project, which is trying to distort history. And, I mean, this has been going on for decades now in the American classroom, which is distorting history and leaving God out of history, the history of America completely. But these cries that the U.S. is inherently racist is just being the kids in the classrooms are being fed this lie. And how do we counter? I know that you mentioned that liberal historians said this project is based on lies. So how do parents counter this if they find out that it's in their public school? Because my understanding is thousands of schools have embraced this curriculum. So how do we counter that?
You're exactly right. Public schools are embracing this curriculum. It's estimated it's going to be in a significant portion of public schools as schools are opening up right now. And this is one of the reasons that we would encourage, you know, parents might need to start thinking more about our educational philosophy and what we're doing, because even though there's a lot of really good teachers and there's some really good administrators that are in the public school system, the system as a whole is not helping promote godliness, is not helping promote morals and good behavior, and it's not always doing a good job academically for our kids. So with that being said, some of the best things that we can do is we can take note of school board elections, because even though these curriculums are being promoted, the school board ultimately is the one in charge of what that school district is going to do. In most school board elections, the school board, for example, I'm in the Texas area, and I live just on the west side of Fort Worth. Fort Worth is a city with roughly more than 1 million people. The president of the school board, or the chair of the school board, he was elected with 870 votes. That's in a town of 1 million people. Mm-hmm. And the school board president was elected by less than 900 votes. What you will discover is in most towns, most school board elections, it's only a couple hundred people,
yeah,
if even 100 people that elect the school board members. And the school board members get to help determine the curriculum that is going to be used, the standards for the school. And it's not very hard if we can get Christians and get churches and some people involved in the process saying, hey, we want to help get good people on the school board, because good people on the school board, first of all, they can help protect the religious liberties of students, the rights of the students to be able to pray over their lunch or have a Bible in school. They can help do some some basic protections of constitutional rights, the freedom of speech, the freedom of religion. But in addition to that, they can help have an influence on that curriculum. And with that being said, you don't have to have a student in that school to be on the school board. You can be a retired grandparent with no kids in the area. You can be a homeschool mom, a homeschool dad, or you can be a parent whose kids are in public school. All you have to do, though, is live in that district where that school is, for you to be able to run for school board or show up to the school board meeting.
Because it was like in Pennsylvania, you're still paying school taxes.
And that's exactly right. Yeah. So that gives you standing to be in that room or to run for school board. And this is one of the things that we have so undervalued the position of school board, not recognizing the influence they have on the hundreds or thousands of students that are in that school district. And generally, it's not hard to be elected because in most local elections, the turnout is less than 2% of the population, if even 2% of the population. We know an example of a man who wanted to run for school board in his county. He was out in a rural area of a state, and as a farmer on election day, he just got busy, and he didn't make it to vote. Turned out he lost the election. Well, he didn't just lose by one vote. He lost because nobody voted in the entire election.
Oh, you're kidding.
Had he or his wife or one of their friends showed up to vote for him, he would have been elected to the school board with one vote, but nobody voted in the entire election.
Wow.
This is where we don't even realize in local elections, almost nobody shows up, so it doesn't take very much to be able to influence that local election and then to get good people on the school board, to get good people on the city council, things that really do make a difference. These are positions that make the biggest difference in our communities, and it's not very hard to get involved and to have a big voice. And then from that position, we can definitely have a say in some of the curriculum that is used. Mm-hmm. If that school is going to use a 1619 project curriculum or something else, the school board gets to be the one that helps determine that. And so that's probably the best place to go for the quickest and best resolution if we're not considering some other educational alternative.
Wow, that's good. I can't believe the guy lost because nobody voted at all in that race. Wow.
Nobody.
Wow.
So sad.
That shows how important one vote is. I mean, just another example of how important one vote is. Hey, how can folks contact you, Tim?
Well, wallbuilders.com is our website, and we have also a YouTube channel. We're on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. We're all over social media. We're doing stuff with history and showing some of the connections with modern culture. So we'd love for people to find out more. Go to our website, wallbuilders.com, and they can click on any of the links for social media. We do videos almost on a daily basis covering historical things, historical artifacts, and we'd love for people to know more.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I do encourage our listeners to go because they do have a great website, offer lots and lots of great resources, and I really appreciate your all's ministry. It's opened my eyes to American history for sure. So thanks
Well, thank
so much.
You so much.
Yeah, thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Okay, take care.
You have been listening to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues. If you would like to get involved in the efforts to defend traditional values in Pennsylvania, please contact the AFAFPA by writing to Post Office Box 1048, Franklin, Pennsylvania, 16323, or by visiting their website at www.afafpa.org.